Welcome to episode 56 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we wish that Mark Gatiss was a little bit more consistent, but it really doesn't matter because David... freaking Warner. It's our commentary for Cold War. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Whitten.
Are we talking adult like Torchwood or adult like Cinemax after 11 p.m.?
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
I demand to be referred to as Sagacity from now on.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 56 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where tonight we get to find out exactly what thawed reptile with a thin vodka dressing smells like if you store it in a damp tin canister for about 41 minutes. Russian reptile. Tonight we are discussing, or doing our actual moment-by-moment commentary of the 7B episode Cold War. Joining me in the GPR studios, as always, is Jay. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
All right, and Melissa over in the corner. Hello, Melissa.
Hello, good evening, sir.
All right, and joining us in the GPR studios is our very special guest and lead instigator, Soleil is in the house. Good evening, sir.
It smells like lavender in here.
Is it?
That's
is that
me.
Lavender?
Thank you.
Oh, very nice.
Welcome, Soleil.
So tonight, we are going to be going through the Cold War episode, which was one of the ones, if you recall from however many episodes back when we did this one, our reaction episode, the week it aired, we were pretty cool with.
Yep.
You know, we had a lot of hype built up about the return or sort of the revisitation, reimagination of the Ice Warriors and everything that was going to go along with it. And again, you know, we were still in the midst of the whole Clara kerfuffle and trying to make heads or tails of that as well. So we will definitely get to that one. We've got news. We knew that as we get closer and closer to December, November and December, that we were going to get the news coming at us hard and fast. Come on, hard and fast.
Well,
thank you. All right. Yeah, I'm going to keep throwing these meatballs. If you guys don't swing, it's your own damn fault. And as expected, we've got all kinds of new stuff to chew on this week. Jay, to the news.
All right. So the big story this week, we talked about it last week, but we actually have the episodes this week, the nine Troughton episodes that were discovered.
Yes.
This for anyone that doesn't understand, I was telling my wife what happened, and I said, no, they found nine Doctor Who episodes. She's like, that's all? Well, you have to consider that in the past 25 years, like it was 25 years ago when they found the first one. In the past 25 years, we have found eight episodes, and here they have found nine all in one chunk. So this is a huge deal. We have two complete Troughton stories, so we now have more Second Doctor stories than are missing, which was the reverse before.
I'll do a little clarification here for folks that aren't as familiar with the layout of the way the Classic Who was broadcast. When we say episodes, bear in mind the fact that for the majority of what we would consider the Classic Who era, episodes was a term that actually qualified the serial nature of the show. Mm-hmm. So a season was broken into a set of stories, and each of those stories were divided into episodes of usually around 20 to 25 minute length. So when they talk about the missing 106, which is now no longer the missing 106.
Right. We're now under 100. Yay!
Sweet! Double digits. we're talking about, in a lot of cases, just as with this one, episodes that all belong to a given story. So these nine that they're accounting for actually fall between two stories.
Right.
What we would consider these days to be, you know, an episode of finger quotes here. So they had always had the audio, and for a number of years, a lot of fans went out there and did reconstructions using still photos and things like that, and laying that against the existing audio that had actually been held on to. But we had believed the film to be lost. So now we have complete Enemy of the World. And what I'm personally really, really psyched about, Web of Fear,
Yes.
Because that's obviously one of our Yeti introductions, which was just awesome stuff. And Charlie being... Yeah.
Can I just say something? Because the article that we... I'm a little confused. The article that we have linked says... if I'm reading this correctly, they're still missing episode 3 of Web of Fear.
No, they had episode 3. That right. was not the, one of the missing
what
episodes.
No. Exactly. What they have now completes them.
No. Okay, I'm going to read this out loud. The previously missing presumed destroyed episodes hail from the Enemy of the World and the Web of Fear, with episodes 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6 of Enemy completing that particular story, and the return of episodes 2, 4, 5, and 6 of Web, meaning only episode 3 of the Yeti sequel still missing. Episode 3 of Enemy and episode 1 of Web were also returned, but they already were held in the archive.
Okay, noted. So... I'd stand corrected on that one. Although, remember when they were first talking about the fact that they came across this stash in Nigeria, that this was of substantial, they found this much among a substantial amount of material that has yet to be poured over.
Right, more than potentially, 9 episodes.
Yeah, so the thought is that there's other stuff that they might still be restoring. And the hopes are that maybe in this particular case, I'm sure that they've got a team of propeller heads pouring over this stuff. But this, maybe this one particular episode is a little farther degraded and they have to see if it's even restorable or what have you. But
and just out of curiosity, why were they in Nigeria?
Because the BBC would ship the show to different countries. And this is just one where it happened to wind up in Nigeria and somebody, missing paperwork or whatever, they didn't actually get to purging this particular, I think it was a relay station that they found him in. And the crazy thing is that this was film in Nigeria. I mean, actual film in the heat of Nigeria. And because they had stored it properly, they were able to recover it. Like it wasn't, it didn't go through the vinegarization process that film normally does in heat.
Can you say a statement though? It's hot, but it's a dry heat, so it's okay. It was a dry heat.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, but I liked the way that they went about announcing this, because we had heard rumors about this months ago, and it was just kind of swept under the rug, like, yeah, no, we don't have anything. But then when they did release the announcement, it was like, yes, we have these episodes. Go get them on iTunes now. Yeah, it was, day and date release that... I think that was incredible.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
You did a really nice job with it, because that's by the time you're actually going to lock those things down, you go and make a statement like that and then tell people they have to wait a month, and it just breeds contempt.
Yeah.
So better to have it wait until everything's done, in the can, ready to distribute, has a pricing structure on it so I know where to hand you my monies, and then turn it over.
And so, I mean, I think the price point on these isn't too bad either. It's $10 per story.
Yep.
The only problem that I've heard people have with it is it's $10 US and £10 UK. So it's like you think that they would stick with the exchange rate, but apparently not. It's more expensive to get it in England than it is here.
Yeah, it works for us.
Well, yeah, I'm not complaining, but
USA.
Supplemental note, we do not have this in the news, but I just figured I'd put it out there. The official word on the time of broadcast is still up in the air for those people who have still been scouring around. Because I go looking, first 15 minutes of my workday every day is scanning around to look for absolute certainty verification of broadcast times for the 50th, and it's still a little squidgy. So just keep your calendars in pencil, please. We don't know.
Right. So we also have news that there was an interview with Neve McIntosh, and she has confirmed that the Pat Noster gang will come back for Series 8. So I didn't get to watch the whole interview, but I know it's at least Vastra and Jenny. I'm not 100% on Strax yet. But
Starkey's been confirmed as well. She actually referred to all three of them because it actually prompted the conversation about whether or not she or any of them have been approached about the spinoff idea, which has various petitions going around online for thousands and thousands of signatures. I know I got involved in a couple of them myself to see whether or not it would work along the lines of a kind of a Sarah Jane Adventures, targeted towards younger viewers. This obviously Strax being comedic relief, and they could do the sort of the Scooby-Doo kind of mystery of the week approach for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. And we also have Doctor Who magazine actually has its own website now. This isn't major news, but I know for people over on this side of the pond, trying to get a hold of it, it can be frustrating at times.
And so, delayed.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to get an issue of it. If you decide to make the purchase on Amazon or something and have it shipped over, you're weeks behind by the time you've got a hard copy in your hands.
Exactly. So it's still early on, and they've said that. They're like, you know, this is our first attempt at a website. Please don't judge us too harshly. So, but it's there. I mean, they've got, you know, some of the headlines up and things like that. So it's something for us over here, at least. And we also have there have been a few new pictures from the Day of the Doctor released. Now these could potentially be a little bit spoilery. Like, I've picked up on one or two minor details that if you're trying really hard to keep away from, you know, any kind of spoilers or anything like that, you might want to avoid these. But for
these
everyone
pictures
else,
have made me so excited, and I think that anything that makes me excited ends up being a spoiler to people.
So yeah, it's definitely getting there to where anything I see is just like, yay! Is it November yet?
So yeah, we're going to put a link to these pictures, but not really go into too much detail about them now. So if anyone wants to see them and tweet us about them and discuss it and fangirl out until November.
Yeah, I'll try not to fangirl out too much.
Maybe that's my thing.
Exactly. And then lastly, we have sort of a compendium of some information from an obscure UK blog here that pulled together some Radio Times recent Radio Times interviews with Stimo that contain some interesting stuff. One involves the fact that Capaldi is actually intrinsically involved in the choice of his wardrobe. And Moffat is actually stepping back from it and just feels like he's actually going to allow the wardrobe team, the producers, and Capaldi to go through their entire stand down, come up with whatever their shortlist is, and then he'll just do a final sign off on it. He said, so, you know, I'll just let him get on with it and it'll be a yes or a no at the end. So we don't even know for certain whether or not you will see what will be officially the 12 Doctor's costume, if you want to call it that, during his introduction in the Christmas episode. We may see him as we did in a lot of the previous regenerations, where he's wearing what his predecessor wore. Exactly. And has yet to determine his new look. Mm. So.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's what we've gotten with both of them before, you know, with Tennant regenerated and he was still wearing the leather jacket and then spent the entirety of the next episode in, you know, a dressing gown. You know, when Matt Smith took over, you know, it was the end of his first full episode before he was wearing the bow tie. So I wouldn't expect to see his costume in the Christmas special, and I wouldn't expect to see it until, like, the last couple minutes of the first episode, really.
Mm, yeah. I mean, it's according to the statement, or according to Stimo's own commentary, he says, you know, he's got very strong opinions about his clothing, you know, but he notes, you know, he's very dashing, and he sort of leaves that out there, which means, you know, leads me to believe that we're going to have a kind of a, you know, well-dressed man.
Right. Sort of thing. Third Doctor, Eighth Doctor kind of feel to it, probably.
Cue the ZZ Top tune, sharp-dressed man.
There we go. Yeah.
So, but the other piece from that interview, or actually from a subsequent interview also with the Radio Times, was a bit of a poking the bear with a stick regarding counting regenerations, and the fact that Moffat decided he was going to confirm. He said, you know, he can only regenerate 12 times, but simultaneously he suggested that there has been a miscalculation of how many regenerations he has actually been through. And I quote, because this is where the foaming at the mouth begins, "I think you should go back to your DVDs and count correctly this time," says Moffat. "There's something you've all missed."
My guess is that he's probably referring to the partial regeneration of the 10th Doctor when we got the Handy Doctor.
True.
Can you come up with a better name, please?
The Handy Doctor.
Oh no, Dr. Hand.
So I'm thinking that's probably what he's referring to.
Personally, I think Steemo should know that DVDs are even a thing of the past, and people don't watch it on DVD. So I wonder if this is pointing us somewhere else, and I'm thinking of the episode Blink, where everything was hidden in DVDs. So maybe this is like, there's like an Easter egg on the, if you bought it for DVD home edition or something.
Just remember that's Melissa at Gallifrey.
That's my personal, yeah. So if y'all find it, email me first.
Exactly. No, or if you just want to tell her that she's absolutely off her nuts.
Yeah. Feel free to call and tell her that she's wrong. That's part of the enjoyment of doing the show. No.
People do.
We love doing that.
People do. You can feel free to.
There's obviously that. I mean, there's things like counts like the one that's staring you right in the face is the fact that where does John Hurt fit into all this? You know, was he the transitional element between 7th and 8th, or I mean, between 8th and 9th? That would allow us to say, okay, well, if he was actually 9, then we're up to 13 and we're done. Mm-hmm. This is it. Now we need to come up with a new gimmick. But regardless, I think, you know that there's going to be some smoke, some mirrors, some unicorn farts, and some sparkly rainbows that are going to change this all, you know, when we get down to whatever the final count is. Yeah. I've got my theories about that.
The biggest thing that I pull away from this is the fact that this is two separate times that he has acknowledged it, and it's starting to gain a lot of attention that he's doing so, which means that it's not going to be a simple hand waving like, oh look, here's another regeneration. Just forget how many you've counted. Yeah, he's actually going to have to explain something if he keeps up at this pace.
Yeah. So. Yep. But of course, we'll be glued to our screens regardless.
Mm-hmm. So,
the last thing that we have in the news is that I met Colin Baker. I'm so excited. New York Comic Con was this past weekend as we record, and I've gone the past couple of years, but I've always worked there. So I had a couple of things that I was expecting to do this year, and they all fell through. So I wasn't going to go to Comic-Con, and I made other plans. I was going to work. And then one of my amazing Twitter followers was like, I have an extra ticket. So I blew up everything else, went to Comic-Con. It was awesome. You all should have been there. But Colin Baker was there. And, well, first of all, John Barrowman was there, as well as Gareth... John, the guy who played Dan.
Gareth Floyd?
Yeah, that's it.
Gareth Floyd, yes.
Yeah. They were there, and so you should see my Facebook feed. So many of my friends got to meet them, and I'm so jealous. But I know other people who waited in line all day didn't get to go, and I had to work at night. So I didn't go in the John Barrowman line, so I didn't get to meet him. So I'm kind of upset about that. But I did get to meet Colin Baker, and I got in the line right when he came in at 2:30, and I was in the back of the line. And I see the people that are meeting with him, and he didn't say a word to anyone. He just who do I make it out to? Okay. And that's it. You would go. And so when it got to be, he didn't say anything to anyone. When it got to be my turn, I heard him saying to his assistant, let them spend more time with me, which, she wasn't stopping them from spending more time with him. She was just on her phone the whole time, not paying attention to anything. And so I was like, yeah, I want to take a picture with you. So I said, I do a Doctor Who podcast. My co-hosts are going to be so jealous. And he laughed so hard. He was like, that is awesome. He said, that is great. So he grabbed me and made me take a couple pictures with him. So that was all he said, but it was more than he said to anyone else in the whole line before me. So I was very excited about that.
Awesome. And then most importantly, what was he eating at the time?
He was not eating anything. I paid attention.
Can I share my one?
Was he on your hand?
Can I share my one non-piece of just OCD news?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's today, as I jumped on Netflix to see if our episode was available, I noticed a sort of interesting shift in the Matrix. I'm very into organization. I'm a little OCD about it. And Doctor Who, a week ago, it used to be very well organized New Who by season, perfectly labeled. And Old Who was just this blah. It was just all over the place. It was confusing. Like, you couldn't figure out what was going on. Today, it's now beautifully bucketed New Who and Old Who, and very well organized. You can walk through it and understand exactly what the structure is, and a lot of it is there. So I think even that, on top of it being organized and well presented, just for us people who are still trying to claw our way backwards, it's now a little bit easier.
Yep. I think we're now up to about 18 of what they categorize as classic Who. Because of the way Netflix organizes things, it still refers to things as seasons. So please disregard that, because it bears absolutely nothing on the actual broadcast pattern of the show itself, either now or then. But it does have a good breakdown of, as we were just discussing earlier, you've got a story broken into serial episodes. So at least within that regard, it's a nice little layout. Read the comments sometime from the rabid classic Whovians who go on tirades in the comments about, why did you choose this one? Of all the ones you could have possibly carried. It's fascinating. You'll gain more out of those than you'll get out of the episodes in a lot of cases.
Nice.
Because some of them were stinkers. They just they put them up there for whatever reason. I don't know what their algorithm was, but it's enjoyable.
It's probably because the BBC just said, here, just take it. Take it, please.
So that you know, I did, and I took a little creative license on this in terms of our layout of episodes upcoming. After we get through the all of the madness of the 50th episode and the Christmas episode and so forth, and now we've got that indeterminate length wait until we start seeing Series A drop into our laps. I did want to make sure that we devote an episode towards the classic Who primer. So that will go in there, so that, because you are not the only one. You've been the champion, the standard bearer for requesting that, but that you have a number of other troops in your militia who have been asking. So I've already started penning it together.
My time has come!
Yes, yes, yes. And it won't just be Troutman and Baker, I promise. It's going to be a little heavy on the Troutman and Baker, that's for damn certain.
Yeah. Well, and then the non-news of the week, there's a video that I found that I found kind of interesting. It's Bill Bailey did a full orchestra jazz theme cover of Doctor Who. And it starts off, he's just saying, I grew up with Doctor Who and it's terrifying. And he starts playing it and it's, the typical, four fast beats that we know and everything. And he's like, that's terrifying as a child. But then if you slow it down, it starts to sound kind of like Belgian jazz or something. And he does this whole song that I was laughing the whole time, and it just sounds great. So if you run out of cat videos on YouTube, you might want to check this out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just because it ties right into that, and it's absolutely not Doctor Who specific, but have you guys heard the slowed down version of Dolly Parton's Jolene?
No, I
haven't.
The slowed down version, I'll connect you right back to it. Of the Doctor Who theme, they stretched that out to about 40 minutes, and it's like traveling through, an alien colon. It's the creepiest thing you've ever heard.
Well, this is a little less creepy, but it's. I'll shoot you the link. You can put in the show notes. Give it a listen. It is haunting. First off, Dolly Parton now sounds like a man who's crooning, but it's hypnotic. So anyway, it ties into Jay's statement. I apologize. Look in the show notes, people.
But we connected it. We'll piggyback that with the slowed down Who theme, so it all ties together.
Yeah.
Oh, put that one in there too, so we can kill ourselves.
you tied that in better than I've tied in some of my references to Star Wars. So hey, you're winning.
Hey, speaking of things that don't link together, let me go.
Go listen to Star Wars Minute.
Yeah.
I'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Jeez. I'm sorry.
Crossing streams. Well, we've got an episode to watch.
Yes, we do.
And now, so bear in mind, you've got to put yourself in the way back machine months back when we were getting ready to see this. As I mentioned at the top of the episode here, we were hearing all these great things about the fact that we were going to have the return of the Ice Warriors. You had this. Gaddis decided as the writer that he wanted to bring back a classic villain or classic baddie, and he talked to talked to Steve-O about it, and this was, I guess, when he was, when they were giving Gaddis the opportunity to write for Series 7, he was penning a couple of rough ideas, and when he was pitching his 30-word descriptors, I guess, if I remember correctly, and I'm paraphrasing the quote from Moffat, he said, as soon as he mentioned Ice Warriors, I didn't need him to discuss it any farther. I told him to go ahead and start writing it. Because, you know, you're tapping into a classic Whovian fanboy who, you know, you hold that carrot in front of him and he's going to reach. So we were waiting for that to see whether or not they were going to be, you know, looked as they did in the past or have the same sort of a premise. And then obviously we wanted to see how, whether we were going to get any more tidbits to the Clara backstory. So.
And Kira, I need to ask, and I apologize for questioning the master. Sorry, for questioning the expert. Can't use master in this context.
No.
But I recall reading that Moffat didn't bite at this idea, that he pushed it back over and over and over until finally the writer finally just hit him so many times, like, fine, just go ahead, try it. So is that totally off base?
I don't know. Maybe I was getting a different story out of it.
It's all in the way that it's worded. Sometimes Steve-O tries to make it sound like he was completely on board, but it was the fact that when Gatiss told him that he wanted to bring back a classic villain, Steve-O had said that he was like, the first thing I thought as soon as he said that is, please don't be the Ice Warriors. And it was kind of something that he just kept on hammering, and Moffat finally relented and said, you know, yes, just, that's when Gatiss tried to explain to him what he wanted to do. And at that point, I think it was the fact that Moffat was so fed up with it that he was like, okay, fine, just go do the Ice Warriors. I don't care anymore. So,
or that the idea that he was going to actually show them not unmasked, that's not the full reveal.
Called
the
full reveal.
Yeah, that's something that he's repeatedly said that he was excited about. So
it was a matter of, you know, if you're going to do this, if you're going to dust off, you know, something that was basically a football uniform painted green and go that route, you're going to have to do something really exceptional with it.
No, that would be American football.
Correct. Sorry. Sport ball.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Ball. So we've got all kinds of interesting stuff to take from here. And we got David Warner in this episode, which we knew was just going to be great stuff. So got that to look forward as well. So we are going to be queued up so that we can synchronize our watches and our broadcasts here. I, for reasons I cannot understand, am stuck at 1 second. Like, it makes a big honking difference, but I'm at 1 second on my copy.
All right, then.
Where we will be descending through the murky depths. So get yourself queued up. Make sure you have your beverage. Did you go potty? Did you get that taken care of? Don't make me turn this podcast around. Okay. And we will be prepared to go in 3, 2, 1, go.
Yay, ice.
Oh, crap, it's Red October. I got the wrong thing queued up.
All right, you got me. I actually almost paused my video.
Well, look, there's Sean Connery.
Look, I'm Russian. In this film, I'm a Russian man.
Right.
Not everything in here responds well to bullets.
No, I mean, they really did go with, like, every submarine trope that you can have in this episode.
Oh, it's pretty funny. I love this bit. Mm. Again.
I think that David Warner was the perfect casting for this role here.
Mm. Yeah. The only reason I disagree is that I wanted more of him, like a multi-arc, like make him a permanent fixture.
Yeah, give him a character that could have persisted beyond this little encapsulation.
Mm.
Well, they could.
I'm just saying he's the perfect mix of like comedic relief and yet still respectable, upstanding person. Yeah. So you can still like look at him and be like, "Now that's a smart guy, and I really respect him for who he is." But he is making me laugh right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when he needs to, when he turns on the gravitas, he definitely has that strength.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I stand by one of my original observations when we first watched this, or when it first aired. I'm like, you know, you think that to this day they could hire some actors who could at least pull off a bit of a Russian accent.
Yeah, but at this point, 50 years into the history of Doctor Who, why change it?
Okay, and what's up with this guy?
Well, because you have to have the asinine ensign who says, "Yeah, I know my orders were, it don't matter. You know, sod that. I'm going to go poking around so I can propel this plot story forward." Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, he turns on the blowtorch while the goggles are still up on his head. little things like that.
Yeah. Gotta have FaceTime, though.
They had FaceTime in the 80s?
I got so excited there because they kept the claw. I was like, that made me happy.
Well, you're still dealing with a reptilian species. It's just a matter of, you know, where they want to go with it.
All right.
This does remind me that I hope that they are going to be doing away with the opening the TARDIS doors wipe reveal at the end of the opening credits.
That's the one thing I can't stand about this new opening sequence. Yeah, I mean, I love the way that they did the Ice Warriors in this. You know, it was true to the original design. You can still look at it and say, okay, that's an Ice Warrior, but they did update it to the point where it doesn't look like they did it with football pads and, you know, $7 worth of spray paint.
Yeah. Well, no, it was £7 worth, so it actually gave you a little bit more paint.
Oh, true. Exchange rate and all that. Now, I remember when we watched this the first time, we all kind of made the comment on how the whole, you know, Doctor landing in the wrong place and not knowing where he's going is getting kind of old.
That's what he does, though.
I don't know. It's not that often.
No, it's like sometimes he, you know, he has pinpoint accuracy, and then other times it's like, oh, wait, this isn't the right planet. Like, you know, I don't know.
That's because of his relationship with the TARDIS. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
And sometimes it just puts you where you need to be.
Yeah. Yay, bottom of the submarine, because that's always fun. Now, that looks like the sub is kind of tilted, and yet you never see that.
That's what I was thinking when I first watched this, that there was going to be some kind of...
They should have at least done a Star Trek bridge rock back and forth. Yes, a woman on a boat full of semen.
Wait, what?
I still don't get what was with the Barbie doll.
Yeah, I think that was a little Troughton reference. This is the idea of just, you know, how often did, you know, 9th, 10th, or 11th ever get searched?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a total tip of the hat to Second Doctor here.
True. Yay.
Oh, Claire is blue.
Soleil, I think you might be a couple seconds ahead of me. But, yeah. Oh, well, not that big a deal.
So just assume that Sully is clairvoyant.
Yeah. What, he isn't?
Well, shh.
I didn't say pretend. I said assume. Your assumption could be correct.
48, 49, 50.
Yeah, about 10 seconds ahead of me.
Oh. I can fix that.
Yeah, and this definitely does seem very Second Doctor to me, just the complete cluelessness of the surroundings.
Oh, who had a burrito?
Look at the production schedule and see what order they produced this. All right, so this was actually done after Hyde.
Yeah, a mammoth.
It's a very small, upright, bipedal mammoth.
Just a no, it's a mammoth. Reference. The first Ice Warriors story apparently said something about a mastodon, and this is a reference to that.
Ah, yeah. This.
Dumbass. Put it down.
Just note that this was the first. First episode shot with Jenna Coleman.
Hmm. Oh, jeez.
Yep.
Welcome to the show. You're going to spend the next, you know, 3 days soaked to the boat.
No, I'm sorry. Technically, second. They did Hyde before this, which was really awkward to try and accept that one first.
And they must have done Asylum of the Daleks before that.
No. Well, yes, because that was still when they were shooting with Gillen and Rory and such. Yeah, so they did Angels, and then Hyde, and then this.
This bothers me to no end. Like, why isn't everybody frying?
Right. We all
That's
know how water
how
works.
Electricity works.
Oh. Yeah.
I love the fact that they do tie it back into the old Ice Warriors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, put it within the same military regimen.
Mm. I mean, I think that's a lot of the reason. If you look at, say, like Rings of Akaten and then this one, there was a lot of, you know, one or the other mentality with people. And it really seemed like people that weren't familiar with Classic Who, that, you know, everything they knew was New Who, seemed to gravitate towards Rings of Akaten. And then people that were fans of the classic series, or at least knew a good portion of it, tended to prefer this one. Mm. And I felt like a lot of that was tied into the fact that they, I mean, this was a lot of fan wank, really, when you think about it. It's like, hey, let's make a reference to this. Let's bring back this old villain. Let's do the stuff that we used to do back in the day. Whereas, you know, Akaten was that very whimsical, let's try different stuff and, you know, see what sticks. And I think it just appeals to the different types of fans in different ways.
Yeah, I agree. Possible. That's kind of what Moffat really tries to accomplish in each of these instances. He loves giving the reference to the classics so that he can tip the hat to them or give them something that they feel they're being recognized for their investment and their commitment to the show over the decades. But he likes to be able to see it evolve. Not necessarily always reinvent or reimagine or do a complete alternate universe sort of a take to it, but take it one step farther so that there's something new to appreciate about it. I'm not sure necessarily that he was effective in doing so with the great intelligence. I had kind of higher hopes for that one, but but at least in this instance, I think they did a nice job.
Mm-hmm.
So would you argue that Moffat is better at reimagining than he is with original material, a la Sherlock?
I don't know. I think you'll have people on both sides of the fence on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, like, I'm new to this. And I, like, I would say I'm not sure that I like Rings of Akhetin better than this episode, you know? But I'm not a classic Who. Like, I've never seen a single Ice Warrior episode.
Right. But then you also, this gets into some of the things that we were discussing with Shooter last week, and that was a matter of whether or not, or, you know, we don't know exactly what depth of influence Moffat had on the final sign-off on each episode, you know, whether he actually forced edits or did any sort of steering corrections along the way, or whether he just went in and said, oh, by the way, I need to advance my arc here, so I'm going to insert a scene that's really sort of disjointed, but, you know, I need to do a little hand-waving here, so, you know, hand me the pen for a second.
But he's the showrunner. Doesn't he have total and ultimate control over
it? Either way, his name is on it. No matter who does it, it's his fault.
Well, yeah,
sure. You know, someone's going to take the bullet, but, you know, yes, as showrunner, that is his right, or you might say his responsibility, but the question is whether or not he actually does do so in every episode, or whether there's certain ones where he says, okay, you know, let's get to production. Let's start, you know, let's start speccing this out for the scene work. Or whether there are ones where he says, you know what, I don't want this one to proceed any farther until we make some major sweeping changes here, or some inclusions or omissions or what have you. Obfuscations.
Mm-hmm.
We saw, you know, in a lot of instances, I'm going to stand by the fact that I think when he's writing, when he is the one writing, he should stick to the emotional heart of the story. And
oh,
when
I totally
it comes
agree.
To, when it comes to the adventure or the whiz bang or the what have you, there are others on his farm team that may be better qualified.
I'm still of the opinion that Moffat is at his best when he is not running the show. Because I look back at the first four seasons, and every favorite episode from each season is a Moffat episode or a Moffat story.
So you're thinking Moffat is head writer versus him being a showrunner.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's when Moffat does his best work, is when he's like, okay, here's this one story that I can focus on, instead of like, okay, everybody give me your material and I'll sprinkle my stuff over the top of it. And, you know, hopefully it'll all work out in the end.
So here's your low-tech equivalent of the Torchwood contact lenses.
And Soleil has no idea what we're talking about.
Not a clue.
He'll get there.
It's like Google Glass, Soleil.
It's exactly like Google Glass. Or for those of you who just watched the last episode of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, yeah, the...
So here's
I'm
your,
not there either.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm only two in. But it's amazing. Oh, yeah, and watch Blacklist.
And I love the fact that Clara just jumped right into this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just she realized there was a job that needed to be done and nobody else was suited for it. She's like, okay, well, then it's my job.
And that was one of her defining moments for me.
Me like, too. I remember us talking about us this first time. Go on.
Oh, no, please.
No, I'm just going to echo what you were saying.
The problem I have with it is the fact that it's not a continual thing. Like, she will revert in episodes coming up. So it's like, had this been the first indication of how awesome she could be, I think it would have been great. But you've got this where she's completely badass, and then she'll come back, you know, later on and be, you know, just another screaming companion. I love how they keep Skarlak out of focus the entire time.
I think that's why they set it on a submarine. You could show it in that obscuring red light and stuff. Mm. It seems scarier. Mm.
I mean, it's like now that we've seen it and we know exactly what's going on, it makes sense why they're doing that. But at the time, it was just, you know, I accepted it as, you know, as something that just needed to happen. And
I was going to notice a little bit of the reversal here, by the way, between this and Asylum of the Dalek, where you've got her guiding him through a microphone.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I think that it's really kind of cool how they're starting to do a lot more of that close-up stuff with Matt Smith, because he is a very expressive person, and mm-hmm. he is the kind of person that you can put that extreme close-up on and get a lot of content.
Yeah. Take a close look at his lack of eyebrows.
Yeah. At least one reference per episode, people.
His eyebrows are the bane of my existence. I think about them way more than I should.
I said, anytime someone brings that up, I think about those pictures I've seen where people use Photoshop to put eyebrows on him, and it is terrifying. Ice Warrior out of the suit, people. That's a new one. Yeah, they chained him up real tight there, didn't they? Mm-hmm.
That, so just open up the whole chest plate.
That's very reminiscent of Oswin being chained down as a Dalek and just kind of rolled forward, and the chains just slid off. Like, at least in Dalek, you saw the chains break.
I still like, you know, I'll give credit to Gaddis once again for the idea of this, of treating the Ice Warriors and their race as even more ultra communist than the Soviet communists that you're dealing with. You know, harm one of us and you harm us all, and that sort of thing. It's like this has been an even more intensified representation of that sort of principle. And you see it even cast against Soviets in 1983, for crying out loud. So
that is an amazing twist.
Yeah. Yeah, you in this episode, you can really see that Gatiss is a huge fan of the horror genre. And he really, really gets it, because, you know, right there you had... Yeah, you had the Ice Warrior run past every character, and all you see is a blur. It's like he knows how to keep it off screen, keep the tension up, and really play everything that he can to just increase the suspense.
Now we just wish that he would write slightly better episodes.
Yeah. Well, given the two that he wrote this season, I'll take this one 8 days a week.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how miserable shooting this episode had to be for these people? Oh, I mean, they're soaked the whole time.
I just want a sauna on set.
There was an episode in the final season of Lost. I think it was the second to last episode. Some of the key actors said that the crew members were peeing in the water to keep it warm for them.
Oh,
they shot the scenes.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on now. I don't know.
Daniel Day-Kim said it. DDK.
They're always complaining about something. Oh, they peed in the pool. I don't have craft services. Jeez, whiny little punks.
I'm in Hawaii.
How come the extras get brown rice and we have to eat quinoa?
It's unacceptable.
I personally love this actor. I remember him from Rome. And it was just
Brutus, yes.
Everybody's going to get all squishified. Yeah. Head squish. It's that loving caress.
This bothers me, though, because if you look at Skarlak's fingers here, like, how do they fit the into the claws?
Like, he folds his fingers.
Apparently. They're like, you know, quadruple jointed or something. I don't know.
Yes.
That was the one thing that bothered me about that.
Maybe those were actually his feet.
Wait, I just realized we missed a million Red Wedding jokes just now. Damn it. That was him.
Cross the streams.
Yeah, we never make references to other fandoms on this show. Jeez.
No, we're all fine here. Everything's good here. How are you?
And I'll sell out everybody right now.
Well, he's Russian. Isn't that what they do?
Mm. Nice close-ups on the prosthetic work. Good job, makeup team.
Yeah. I mean, it actually looks really good. I know I was complaining about that with Akaten last week, and here, not so much.
Little claw up the nose, digging for gold. All good.
And that he shows up in the Cold War, another lovely twist.
Yes.
And I remember being slightly upset that we get to see Jenna Coleman in a wet white dress at the beginning of the episode and then not anything since then. Minor nitpicks.
We see her in a schoolgirl skirt next season.
And I do believe technically it was a light blue satin dress, and wet satin doesn't look like anything anyways.
My care wasn't paying that close attention.
Wet satin does look like something.
It looks like a wet mess. I'm also wondering, with the sheer rate at which all this dripping water is falling everywhere, nonstop, there should be a hull breach somewhere.
Yeah. I love the look on Clara's face there, like, what the heck is that? Okay. He's holding that gun all wrong. You never walk around with your finger on the trigger. Jeez. And see, right there, that's what I'm talking about, is, you know, he can make you laugh 1 second, and then the next, you know, just say something simple like courage, and you're like, yes, be good. You know, and it's like that inspirational moment in just, like, you know, three words.
Come on, some Duran Duran. Doom, 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 doom.
That was 83. We're not there yet.
That's a different.
Yeah, I actually had to check when I saw this the first time, and I looked against the Duran Duran and made sure that it was out already. Because, you know, that's
topping the charts.
That's the important stuff. I can believe the Martian warrior coming down and winding up on a Soviet submarine, but if you don't get the dates on the music right, then, you know, I call foul. My suspension of disbelief only goes so far.
Oops.
Universal Translator doesn't know English to Japanese to Russian.
No, the word literally didn't exist.
He looks familiar as well. Yeah. Who was that little twit? Who else has he played? Some sleazy little...
He's a British actor, so could have been any number of things.
He also looks a little bit like Alan Cumming. Best way to show a mutilated body, just leave a hand sticking up.
Yeah.
It's pretty clever.
And I like because this is where everything just kind of becomes real for Clara.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was all,
just a game.
Yeah, she was all excited because, you know, it's like, oh, she survived the Ice Warrior, but that didn't really mean anything to her at that point.
Yeah. I think she's taken it remarkably well.
Yeah. And she's listening to what I'm saying.
Yeah. He tells her to stay put, and she doesn't argue. She doesn't wander off. It's like
she stays put.
And, I mean, that's a first.
Okay.
See, I like these moments where there's not really anything going on and they're just building the depth of the character.
Totally.
I feel like this is something that needs to happen way more often. As long as it's done right, I should say that.
Yeah, and not just I miss home, you know, I miss the chips, I miss the curry, I miss...
Bangers and mash.
And other things that aren't food, but I'd rather have something that shows the impact on their psyche of what they're being exposed to, what they're being enlightened to.
Mm-hmm.
How do they process?
Oh, there you are, Garrett. Good slide.
Yeah, on the diamond plating. I love that. It's like only Matt Smith could slide across like diamond plating like that.
Well, wet aluminum. It's not true diamond plating either.
Well, still, I doubt that I could get that kind of distance.
I doubt Peter Capaldi could get that kind of distance.
Peter Capaldi's not going to be a slider. I'm just going to go out on a limb right now and say there will be no sliding.
So enjoy this episode while you can. Take in the sliding.
He's going to be like a foot stamper. He's going to come in and stamp his foot. I have had bleep enough!
Now, can you imagine, like, 30 years from now, you see somebody, you know, you're sitting there watching Doctor Who and, you know, his 27th regeneration, and somebody slides across the floor, and you're like, yeah, it's a reference to the 11th Doctor.
The one with the
friction. I just pictured someone at Comic-Con doing that, like, everyone clapping. Perfect.
Ooh, Mackin.
And we start to see the first little bit of the crappy CGI.
Well,
I mean, at least here they kept it dark and there's fog and stuff going on, so it's I can accept that a little bit better.
Remember, this is television, not film. So they're only going to take it so far on their budget.
Do you guys think they're going to bring the Ice Warriors back?
I wouldn't be surprised if you see another sort of a Pandorica assembly of villains with Ice Warriors present. Because they left the door open, as we'll see.
I could almost see them becoming kind of a like begrudging ally in an episode at some point. You know, it's like, well, we're both here, and here's this horrible, unspeakable evil. You know, let's work together to eradicate this, and then we'll go back to being enemies.
I was thinking the same thing, that they'll be brought back for a massive retaliation type plot.
Yeah, but on their own terms, because as I noted when we first watched this one, I just seem to gather just on their principles and their discipline and what and their structure of their society or of their race as general. This just struck me as Klingon. You know, their representations of honor and duty and so forth, and what we might consider to be barbaric to them were symbols of their prowess and their stature. So I don't know, them getting into an opportunistic partnership. Yeah, but it'd have to be some pretty outrageous circumstances. Because especially now, after we find that they've been wronged, as they see it, or he's been wronged, you know, before he comes and gets collected, and then they get to go back to the far side of Mars and seethe for a while.
Yeah, but at the end, I mean, he does still turn off the warheads and stuff, so there's a...
Yeah. Spoiler.
Yeah. Sorry about that. No. But, I mean, you get that moment of, okay, you know, here we're having a truce. You know, this is my show of goodwill kind of thing, so... I could see it going either way. It would take, like you said, some extreme circumstances, but thankfully this is Doctor Who. That's, you know, part and parcel. I feel like this is quintessential, you know, Doctor Who. This is pretty much what it boils down to, is always like trying to discuss the situation, never resorting to violence, or, you know, seldom resorting to violence. Like, there's always got to be a way to solve something without sacrificing life. Mm. It's like, it'll happen if it needs to, but that's, you know, last resort. And it's so different compared to some of the shows on TV nowadays, where it's just like, oh, let's go in and blow everyone up and then take what we need. And the screwdriver's red setting.
The red light. The self-destruct sequence.
Matt Smith's face in the scene is really good.
Because this is textbook doctor companion problem solving. Doctor takes it as far as he can, needs the companion for that last little bit of enlightenment to either give him the idea or to actually take the reins and push it through to its conclusion.
Yeah.
Which is what they need to be more consistent with Coleman, so that she is not either the driver through the entire episode and the Doctor is just tagging along, they do some sort of bizarre role reversal, or the inconsistency with how capable or incapable she is, in which case she has nothing to contribute at episode's end except other than waking up and saying, "What happened? How did we get here?"
Yeah. I still think that if you're going to bring back a classic villain and, you know, unmask them, you need to put a little bit more effort into making it worthwhile. It's like, I really would have preferred that the helmet just stayed on the whole time.
Okay.
Agreed.
I go half and half.
I mean, it's cool to see it. Like, the concept is cool after all these years, finally being able to see it. But at the same time, it's, yeah, there's a lot more power in the imagination.
You know what? Here, I'll throw this at you. It should have been a Muppet. It should not have been CG.
Grover. Yeah. Or Oscar the Grouch.
Ice Warrior I am, yes.
Don't you leave me in a cage.
The Swedish chef.
I seriously think that if Jenna Coleman's eyes got any bigger, they would literally just like fall out of her head.
She's like a Disney princess companion.
Yeah.
Is she like 5 feet tall?
She's pretty
tall. Matt Smith's pretty tall. So that didn't answer your question at all.
To the interwebs.
I'm sure all her measurements are out there somewhere.
I guess 5'5 for Jenna Coleman.
I'm going 5'2.
Yeah, 5'2. I've changed my answer.
Nope, I'm saying 5'6. Price is Right rules. Closest without going over.
I'll go 5'3.
And then here is where I get pulled entirely out of the episode. The TARDIS explanation.
The Hads?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they just... Yeah.
But isn't that another callback to...
Yeah, it's a reference to the Second Doctor era when they had the... They use that to explain it, but yeah, it's very convenient for this one.
Oh, you know, when I first saw this, that was my reaction too. It's like a little too convenient, but they had to, unless they put the TARDIS in a room that was flooded and they couldn't access it. Like it was a necessary plot device tied into Old Who. So, and
but one that could have been used in a dozen other instances. And wasn't. They had to come up with a better means of going about it. I mean, how many times have you seen the TARDIS itself threatened? But just because he's been tinkering with it, it suddenly functions and functions better than he wants it to. You know.
And Jenna Coleman is 5'2".
That was us! Yes!
Yeah. Well, that was cool.
So, yes. Now, heading into next week, I'm pleased. We had a good run of shows going for a little while here. I mean, as far as the broadcast order went, you know, we hit a stride with this. You know, Cold War came out and sort of quelled some of the disparity of all the people that were sitting on either side of the Rings of Occidan fence and saying all their nasty things to one another and throwing their vegetables. Cold War came out and got a different group of people throwing their vegetables at one another, you know, people for different reasons entirely. So, you know, camaraderie in their combativeness. And then we go next week into Hyde, which classic horror story. We're getting a little early for Halloween, but that's all right.
I think it's perfect timing.
Yeah. You can have it under your belt by the time you decide to go out and throw on your 14-foot scarf to play your fourth Doctor for trick-or-treating.
So, all right. Watching it again after the break, does it hold up for you guys? What's your opinion compared to your original thought? So let's start with you.
I was actually pleasantly surprised. I remember enjoying it, but I was sort of middle ground. That I wasn't thrilled. I wasn't against it. I was like, well, that was a good episode. Watching it again, and now having the entirety of the series under my belt, I really enjoyed it. I think that there were some really great character moments, especially for Jenna. I thought Matt Smith had some great moments as well, and the supplementary cast were all, you know, as good as it possibly could be. A little down on, you know, sort of the alien look, but I appreciate the nod to like the original costumes and whatnot. Overall, I would give it a strong B plus.
All right. Melissa, how about you?
I mean, I would say I would probably give it a B plus too. I'm still not like, I feel like I must have said, I don't remember exactly what I said when we first went through this series, but I don't know if my opinion has changed much of where I liked this episode. I feel like I should have liked it more, but since I'm not, I'm more familiar with New Who than Classic Who, you know, maybe I'd appreciate it more if I knew more about the Ice Warriors. But all in all, like, it really was a solid episode. And I'm always tempted to compare it to Rings of Akatan, which, again, I liked, but I wish I'd liked more. And I'd probably give that one more of maybe like a B or a C plus. So, this one kind of has the edge. But, solid episode, really liked it. But I think you guys maybe got more out of it than I did.
Kier?
I still enjoyed it about the same level as I did the first time it was around, because I kind of felt like I was gaining the same things that I was hoping to get out of it. It was a nice, I knew it was going to be an encapsulated story. I didn't think they were going to pull as far back from the who or what is Clara arc as they did. I mean, they literally did not touch it at all, other than just giving, if you want to consider her little moment of introspection as something, but that really wasn't connected to the who or what is she,
right?
Premise, but obviously the references to Classic Who, but also the Classic Who construct, you know, the way the episode was structured, you know, the way they got into trouble, the way they dealt with the trouble, the way they got out of the trouble, was all, I mean, textbook Doctor Who going back decades. You know, it's a formula that works for them when they're not doing the more intensive, you know, psychological or really complex arcs. When they want to do a monster of the week, this is the way it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I liked it a little bit more this time, simply because most of my enjoyment the first time was the fact that it wasn't Rings of Akatan. Yeah, and then, yeah. But then it also detracted from it, because the whole time I'm like, I want to know what's going on with Clara. I want to know what's going on with Clara. I didn't have that problem this time, so I was able to just look at the episode and enjoy it for what it was and not have to worry about when am I going to find something out.
Right.
So, yeah, I definitely think it fared a little bit better in my estimation this time around.
It would have been one of those instances where if Moffat came in and said, look, I need to add a little button scene at the end of this, so that it ties into the Clara arc, it would have stood out horribly. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that he showed some restraint to leave it alone.
Yeah, definitely.
But we want to know what all the listeners think about this as well, as they're going through this experience with us. I know we've been hearing from a couple of folks. Kodiak, thank you for some of the comments and things you've been pointing out along the way as well. Badger's been sharing as always, and always appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
But folks, please continue to do so, you know, whether it be, tweeting us, which seems to be one of the preferred mechanisms for really getting the, you know, funny people using Twitter as a way to get a quick thought off their heads. So it's kind of almost as if that was what it was intended for. So tweet us at Gallifrey Radio. The Facebook page is always is there for you to be able to sound off on the individual episodes themselves or suggestions in general.
Mm-hmm.
The iTunes comments, which always help us on our organic ranking within the world of podcasts, always appreciated. Jay, we've got the voicemail thing.
Yes,
set
yeah,
up
we
as
do.
Well, right, so that's rocking. So we can start including callers. That'd be sweet. Yeah, make us feel like professional podcasters or something. That'd be awesome. So that's area code 210-802-1477, which stands for what?
It's that makes it 210-802-1 GPR.
Okay.
So, doesn't make it any easier to remember, but it's
that there. Really. It's like all the numbers before it's like looking at a license plate. I could never, if I ever got in a hit and run and had to read off a license plate, it was yellow, I think. It had digits on it. I couldn't remember exactly.
It starts with one and it ends with GPR.
Yeah. It's something, 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 one GPR. So, or of course, always email us feedback at gallifreypublicradio.com, or you know, related to that, just go ahead and drop your comments on the individual posts for each episode at gallifreypublicradio.com on your web browser of choice.
Yes. All right. Well, this has been episode 56 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, stuck in a tin can that's about to buckle under tremendous pressure from the water outside. Perfect time to defrost a large sea monster. What could possibly go wrong?
And this is Melissa saying, was that Stannis' friend, Stannis Baratheon, on that submarine?
It's totally him. I totally saw him. Oh,
totally.
And this is Kier saying, you know, you even if as an extra on the cast, you would have to pay me a pretty, pretty penny to walk around wearing wet Walkman headphones the entire frackin' time.
And this is Slay saying, thank you, Gallifrey Public Radio, for allowing me to stop, collaborate, and listen. End of line.
See you guys next week.
Adam Z.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com or leave us a voicemail at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You can also find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio, on Stitcher Smart Radio, facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio, or on iTunes. You can also head over to our homepage at gallifreypublicradio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the topics we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.